Cool. So welcome to today's talk on Real Life. This is the last week of our Real Jesus mission, but there's no need to get sad just yet. We still have one more talk this Thursday in Lecture Room 2 at 4 o'clock, so make sure you can go to that if you're free. Before I go on, I'd just like to introduce myself. My name is Hannah, and I'm currently studying biomed, and I'm in my second year. So for those of you who weren't with us here last week, we had a look at a passage from John to see what that had to say about justice. And today we're going to be looking at that same book to see what it has to say about real life. If you're not sure what the book of John is, it's a book in the Bible that was written not long after Jesus' death and resurrection by a man who actually saw Jesus himself. So this makes it one of the earliest and certainly most reliable sources from which we can see Jesus and his teachings. So we're going to be reading from John 10, verse 10 to 18. Cool. Sweet. So, there's a copy of it on the outline you would have received on the way in. Okay, so. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Cool. So I'd like to now invite Ben Ray to come give us a talk. Ben studied neuroscience at UWA before working as a research scientist for a couple of years, and now he helps out here at CU.
Thanks, Hannah. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. What would having life to the full look like for you, do you reckon? Would it be having lots of friends, going out every night partying, being one of the gang? Would it look like graduating with first class honours and getting a fantastic job and a great career? Would it look like travelling, maybe going on exchange, maybe trekking around the world with some mates? Or maybe you're more the sort of romantic type. Would life to the full look like falling deeply in love with the person of your dreams? Would it look like your ideal wedding, the perfect marriage, and living happily ever after? Would life to the full look like retiring early and being able to spend the next 30, 40 years ticking off everything on your bucket list? All the songs that you must listen to before you die, all the movies that you must watch before you die, all the places you must go before you die. Is that what life to the full would look like? The passage we've just read, like Hannah said, comes from a biography about Jesus by John, who was one of Jesus' closest friends. And it's an unusual sort of passage, I guess, if you're familiar at all with kind of Middle Eastern people and conversation, then you know that they love illustrations and stories. And this is an illustration that we get here that all revolves around sheep. But, of course, Jesus is not talking about first century agricultural practices. He's not trying to pass on tips for how to run a farm. He's actually talking about us and him. We're the sheep and he's the shepherd. The good shepherd who has come that we may have life and have it to the full. But it does kind of raise a question, doesn't it? Why would you actually need Jesus to have life to the full? Because as I sort of walk around uni and chat to people, most of them seem to be having pretty good lives. And Jesus has not really entered their thoughts at all. Why on earth would I need Jesus to have life to the full? I mean, I'm just a happy-go-lucky, free-range kind of sheep. I'm independent. I don't need a shepherd at all. Most of the time I'm, well, you know, today I'm probably huddled somewhere in the ref with the other sheep, trying to keep warm and dry. But most of the time you can find me out on the grass, out on the oak lawn, lying out there soaking up the sunshine, just enjoying the ambience, soaking it all up with the other sheep, without the slightest thought of Jesus entering my head. I've got my own patch of grass, my own group of friends to run around with. Life is good. I mean, of all the paddocks that you could end up in, this is a pretty good paddock, isn't it? We are the richest 1% of the sheep on the farm. We're the prize merinos. We have everything laid on for us. There's plenty of people around. There's plenty of fodder. You know, if you get sick of making your own lunch, then you can go to the Guild Cafe or the Ref. Once you get sick of Guild food, which probably won't be too long, you can head over to Chili's and there's more food. And once Chili's has given you a stomach ache, you can move on to Broadway and have a kebab or have Japanese or Chinese or whatever you like. We have our songs on our phones. We have movies that download straight to our laptops. We're entertained. We've got a warm bed to sleep in and good prospects for our future. And for most of us, nothing particularly bad has ever happened. For some of you, you may never have had anyone near or dear to you die. You may never have lost anyone at all. In fact, you may never have even lost a job. Life is pretty good in this part of the farm. Why would I need a shepherd? And why would I need Jesus to have life to the full? I mean, life often does feel like that, doesn't it? Life is good, no worries. But here's the thing. This is the critical thing to pick up in the illustration that Jesus uses. He compares us to sheep. See, of all the animals that he could have picked, lions and tigers and bears, he doesn't. He picks sheep. And if you know anything about sheep, that's slightly crushing. That Jesus thinks, of all the animals that I can think of to compare people to, sheep are the most appropriate. Because sheep are not bright. My parents own a little hobby farm down in Donnybrook. They grow olives on it. But they also run a couple of sheep. Well, actually a couple of dozen sheep on it. Just to keep the grass down. And sheep are dumb. They are really dumb animals. And they are vulnerable. The sheep we have turn out to be well looked after sheep. They are fat sheep. They don't cope well with stress. And occasionally, they're foolish enough to get outside the fence, out into another paddock. And we have to come and chase them back. So one time I was down there and we were trying to round up these sheep and get them back. And one of them was so fat that it ran about 30 metres and then it just lay down. That was it. And we had to roll it back under the fence. Sheep are not clever animals and they are not good at defending themselves. Sheep have enemies. They have thieves who come to steal and kill and destroy. There are wolves that attack and scatter the flock. If you were trying to design a well-defended animal, someone that could fight off its attackers, you would not pick a sheep. Sheep are kind of soft and fluffy, and they have big fat bellies just waiting to be ripped open. And they're full of meat on the inside. They panic easily, and they're not even that good at running away. Sheep are helpless and pathetic. When the British Labour politician Dennis Healey said that being criticised by his conservative opponent was like being savaged by a dead sheep. He did not mean it as a compliment. Sheep are pathetic. And they have enemies. Every so often on a Saturday morning, I go with my daughter to the Perth Zoo. And every time we go, she says, "Dada, can we see the crocodile?" Snap, snap. And so we always go and see this huge saltwater crocodile. He's about 6 metres long and he is just pure muscle. And every time we go, I find myself thinking, if I fell in that tank, I would be a goner. I would have no hope. And I read the little sign outside the crocodile enclosure that explains that crocodiles are apex predators. They're at the top of the food chain. They eat everything and nothing eats them. Humans, wolves, crocodiles, they're all apex predators. Sheep are not apex predators. You may be the most friendly, the most cheerful, happy-go-lucky sheep in the world. You may not realise it at all, but you have powerful enemies. Enemies that are always there, always lurking outside the sheep pen, intending to capture and kill you, to rip you open and to leave your carcass to rot in the grass. The disease that comes to steal your health, the boyfriend or girlfriend who's unfaithful to you and robs you of your happiness. The unemployment that destroys your carefully planned career. The stock market collapse that scatters your friends, leaving you all alone. Those things are bad enough. They can leave us like sheep sort of cut off from the flock, left out on our own, never knowing what's coming next, bewildered and lost, lonely and frightened and vulnerable. But as bad as those things are, as bad as disease and financial ruin and betrayal might be, they are not our worst enemies. They're just your sort of run-of-the-mill predators, your sort of foxes that nip at your heels, the maggots that dig in and slowly wear you down. But there are other predators, apex predators. And our apex predators are sin and death. They get everyone and no one gets them. Doesn't matter how hard you fight or how fast you run, sin will chase you down. Doesn't matter how strong you might be, how healthy you might be, in the end, death will get you. Sin and death, they always get you in the end. They get everyone. Now, sin is a word that doesn't sort of get used a great deal in our culture anymore. It's just the Bible's name for our insistence that we are at the centre of the universe. Not God, not anyone else, just me. And it's about the terrible way that we treat God and others as a result. Now, the thing is that very few of us would ever say out loud, "I am the centre of the universe." We're sufficiently aware of how others might react that we don't say that. But isn't that actually normally the way that you live? As if you're the centre of the universe? I mean, have you ever found yourself lying because it makes your life a bit easier? Have you ever found yourself gossiping about someone because it makes you feel important? People pay attention to you. Have you ever found yourself looking at pornography, even though you know that it's wrong and it's demeaning to the people involved, and that study after study has shown that it diminishes your capacity for relationships of real love? Well, why do you do it? Why do you lie and gossip and look at porn? Well, I think it's because they make me feel good, even if very briefly. And if it makes me feel good, I'll do it. See, theoretically, I might care about God. I might, in theory, care about others. But in practice, a lot of the time, I really just care about me. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't want to imply that we deliberately set out to do that, that we wake up every morning and go, it's all about me, I don't care about anyone else. But the thing is, we don't need to do that, do we? It just kind of comes naturally. We do it without even having to think about it. We're just naturally self-centred. We've turned our backs on God and on others. We've rejected the owner and the other sheep and gone our own way, convinced that we know best. But the thing is that although that sounds like freedom, freedom to do whatever I like, the reality is that we've become slaves. We've been captured. We thought we had this stroke of sheepy genius that I'll be able to do whatever I like. I'll decide to live my life. I'll do it all my own way. But we're captured by our own self-centeredness. It destroys our relationships with others, and it destroys our relationship with God. We're guilty before him for the way we've treated him and the people that he's made. And we deserve his judgment on our self-centeredness. And one day, that judgment will come down in all of its horrifying reality. Because out there in the shadows, somewhere beyond the sheep pen, something's circling. Something's lurking. And we know it's there. We smell it on the breeze. But we try to ignore it, try to push it to the back of our head, try to distract ourselves, have fun with the other sheep. We try to ignore what's coming. We have competitions to try and be the greatest sheep in the sheep pen. But deep down, we know that out there in the shadows, death lies waiting. Sigmund Freud once said that death is characterised by darkness, silence, and solitude. And I think he's right. Turn on the light, put in the headphones, find some friends, hang out with them. Do whatever you can to keep yourself occupied, anything to distract ourselves from the clear and present danger that exists for all of us, the reality that lurks out there waiting to destroy us, the reality of death. Sometimes wonder if that's why TV is so popular. Light, noise, people, even if they're just kind of artificial people, anything to push away the darkness, the silence, the solitude, the echoes of death that come to us. Always there, creeping ever closer until the day that it pounces and destroys us. Now, death alone would be bad enough, but it actually gets worse, because death brings us before the judgment of God, where we will face the consequences for our sin, where we'll have all our self-centeredness exposed for everyone to see. And can you imagine how horrific that would be? We spend an awful lot of our time trying to hide our own self-centeredness, to keep it from others. We make excuses, we try to justify ourselves, because we know that if people knew what we are really like, they would not like us. They would see us in all our awfulness. And that is a terrifying thing. There's coming a day when we will be rightly condemned by God, cut off from real life, cut off from sunshine and water and grass, from love and happiness and joy. Looking forward to nothing except an eternity of darkness, silence, and solitude. Condemned to a living death for the way that we've treated God and others. See, that is the reality that all of us face. You may have a great life now, but sin and death are always there. The apex predators are out there, lurking around the edges. and there is not a thing that you can do about it. Not that we don't try, mind you. We've created all sorts of different possibilities to try and protect ourselves from the predators, from sin and death. We've created this whole industry of self-help books to try and rescue us from our sin. Try harder. Take control of your life. Unleash the giant within. Believe in yourself. Lean in. Man up. Get a grip. But they're all just self-defence classes for sheep. They're a total waste of time. They're asking us to be strong when in fact we're weak. You can't combat your own sin. You can't remove your self-centeredness by thinking harder about yourself. Even if we did manage to break some of our more destructive habits, what would be the result? I think the result would be we'd be pretty pleased with ourselves. We'd come out more cocky, more arrogant, more contemptuous of others than when we started. You can't escape self-centeredness by being more self-centered. We'd just be strutting around feeling pleased with ourselves, feeling like we were better than the other sheep in the flock. But all the time, we'd still be in the thief's flock. Sin has captured us, and we cannot set ourselves free. Now, sometimes we recognise our own helplessness, and so we try and buy in people to help us. We hire others who can protect us from the enemies that are out there. We give billions of dollars a year to counsellors and psychologists, to doctors and drug companies. We bow down and worship at the altar of science in the hope that somehow, just maybe, it might be able to extend my life for just a little bit longer. A few months, a few years, even the twilight years. But morally, we're no better than our ancestors, and the mortality rate is still stubbornly stuck at 100%. Millions follow the teachings of Muhammad, and millions more those of the Buddha. But Muhammad and the Buddha, they're not the answer either. For all their wisdom and insight, they're just hired hands. When the enemies come, when sin and death attack, they're helpless. They run away and they leave us crushed in the jaws of death. When it comes to the enemies of sin and death, we can't defend ourselves. And although there are plenty of hired hands who talk a big game, when sin and death come prowling, none of them are able to help. If we're going to have life and have it to the full, we need not just a bad shepherd, we need a good shepherd. Someone who can defend us. Someone who can fight off our enemies. Someone who won't just bail the moment sin and death come round. Someone who's willing to die rather than let them destroy us. We need a good shepherd. Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep." See, Jesus is no hired hand. He's not the sort of guy who runs away when death and sin appear. He's the son of the owner, the son of the Father, of God himself, come in the flesh to rescue his sheep, to lay his life down to protect them. He made you, he owns you, and he loves you. That's why he's willing to lay down his life to defend you from your enemies. That's actually what Jesus' death is all about, his crucifixion. It may have looked like just another stolen sheep falling victim to the wolf. But it's much more than that. It's actually the death of the shepherd, the good shepherd, who lays down his life for the sheep. The one who dies to protect us from the apex predators, of sin and death. See, by dying on the cross, Jesus takes all the punishment that we deserve on himself. All the punishment we deserve for rejecting God and for treating others with contempt. For acting as if we're the centre of the world. And in doing that, he actually defeats and destroys our enemies. He strips them of their power. He's rescued us from the thief and he's defanged the wolf. If Jesus is your shepherd, then sin has no power over you anymore. God won't condemn you for wandering away and acting as if you're the centre of the world. He won't punish you for that because Jesus took that punishment on himself. So if Jesus is your shepherd, then no matter what you've done, no matter what you might do in the future, you're free. You'll never be condemned. The son of the owner gave his life to save you, to snatch you back from the thief. Sin doesn't control you anymore if Jesus is your shepherd. You belong to him. But it gets even better. Have a look at verse 17 there in the passage with me. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. See, a shepherd who dies to save you is wonderful, but once they've died, they're not much use, are they? They can't lead you, they can't guide you, they can't protect you from any other enemies. But the good news is that the shepherd who gave his life for you didn't stay dead. 3 days after he gave up his life for us, Jesus was raised again from the dead. He broke the power of death once and for all, defanged the wolf, and emerged victorious to be the good shepherd for all who choose to follow him. See, we're sheep. We're just sheep. We can't protect ourselves from the enemies. We can't fight them off. But the great news of Jesus is that we don't have to. He's defeated them for us. The Good Shepherd has come so that we could have life and have it to the full. Now, some people have the idea that Christianity is actually kind of oppressive, that God is a sort of cosmic spoil sport, and that if you take on Jesus as your shepherd, you can kiss goodbye to any real enjoyment in life. But that's just sin talking. That's just our conviction that actually we know best. But where has that gotten us? In reality, life with Jesus as your shepherd is the complete opposite of all that. It's a life full of joy and hope and security and confidence. Jesus doesn't suck the joy out of life. He puts the joy in. Life with Jesus as your shepherd means never having to fear your own sinfulness again. Never having to worry about what you might do, that your wickedness might ruin your life. No, it can't. Jesus has paid for your sin. You will not be condemned before God. If you trust in him as your shepherd, you're free. You're set free from always having to try and justify yourself, always having to come up with increasingly elaborate excuses as to why what you did was perfectly justifiable and you didn't really do anything wrong and, you know, people should cut you some slack. It sets you free to admit, yeah, I did the wrong thing. I'm sorry about that. In the confidence that you are forgiven. You're set free to own up, to admit to your sin without fear of God's condemnation. And his death for us sets us free from feeling inferior to others, to always comparing ourselves, to saying, oh, I wish I was like them. I wish I could just somehow be a better person. And it sets us free from looking down on others who don't come up to our standards. Because we know that we have everything in Jesus. Total security, total life, total hope. And it's all because of him, not because of anything that we did. And life with Jesus sets you free from the fear of death. We're surrounded by people who, although they may not realise it consciously, are controlled by death. They're trying to cram everything that they can into their lives, to have every experience, so that, because they know that death is coming. Sooner or later, death is going to cut their time short. And so they run around frantically ticking things off their bucket list, as if that achieves something. We don't need to do that if you put your trust in Jesus, because you've got an eternity of life before you. You don't have to get all those experiences in now. You've got an eternity in God's new creation to be able to do that. You don't have to despair when life is hard and things don't turn out the way you expected, because you know that you have a good shepherd. Sure, the journey might be difficult now, the path might be dark and at times scary, but you have a shepherd who is leading you, a shepherd who has gone through death and out the other side victorious, a shepherd who is watching over you and guiding you into a life where every thief has been thrown in prison and every wolf has been slaughtered. A life of sunshine on your back, of fresh water in the creek, and grass stretching as far as the eye can see with not a fence in sight. That's why Jesus came. He came to be the good shepherd. He came so that we could have life and have it to the full. Now, we're doing all right for time, so why don't I pause there and just see if anyone's got any questions about that. Sorry to spring that on you, sort of unwarned. Does anyone want to ask anything about that? Yeah.
Does life of Jesus like protect us from like disease or anything? Like, well, that's not that.
Does life with Jesus protect us from disease, was the question? No. Life may be difficult and hard now, but with Jesus as our shepherd, we know where it's going. We know that it's going to real life, to life to the full, that although we will die, death doesn't have the last word. Jesus will raise us like he himself was raised. So it's not a guarantee that life will be absolutely wonderful for you now, but it is a guarantee that there is a wonderful life coming and that you can have total confidence in that because of what Jesus has done. Yeah, good question. Yeah?
Ben, can you just give some insight into verse 17 passage?
So that's the one about I have other sheep who are not of this.
No, it's no? The reason so, my father loves me is that I lay down my life.
Mm. Yeah, the reason the father loves me is because I lay down my life only to take it up again. Yeah, so I think what he's saying is that the father loves me because I am the person who is willing to lay down their life for the sheep. That's why he loves me. That is... He looks at Jesus, the Father looks at Jesus, and he says, that is spot on. That is exactly the right thing to do. And only you could do it. And he loves him. Not that he didn't love him before, but he loves him because he's that kind of person. Jesus takes his life up again. He's not sort of wiped out and obliterated. Yeah.
Is it alright then to enjoy certain things like traffic now, or should we wait
for communication? Yeah, so is it right or a right, did you say?
Is it good for us to do?
Yeah. Yep. So it's not, none of those things I sort of said at the start are wrong. They're good things. To be able to travel and to see the world that God has made and to enjoy all those sorts of experiences. But the thing is that if this life is all you've got, then there's a lot of pressure on that. You've got to try and cram all that in. You feel like you've got to do it now while you've got the chance. But if you know Jesus, if you know the shepherd who defeats death, then all of that goes away. I mean, you don't have to see everything now. Do you think that Paris in the new creation is going to be worse than Paris now? No way. It's going to be infinitely better. So it's not wrong to enjoy the creation that God has given us. That's good. But we need to deal with the fact that we have enemies out there who intend to destroy us and who intend to ruin our life. And unless they're dealt with, then everything else is just kind of a distraction, a way of trying to keep our mind off the fact that there's a wolf out there waiting to destroy us. But with Jesus, we're set free from that. We know that we have life guaranteed for us. And so, you can go and enjoy the things now, but you don't need to feel frantic about it. There's not 1,000 songs that you need to listen to before you die. The music in the new creation will be far better than anything now. All right. Good questions. Let me wrap it up. So, tackled a few questions, but I think the critical question to ask is, will you listen to Jesus? Will you listen to the shepherd? Will you admit that your enemies are too strong for you, that you're just a sheep, that you can't defend yourself against them? Will you listen to the good shepherd? Will you let Jesus give you life, life to the full? Now, it may be the first time that you've ever heard anything about this. It may be the first time you've really thought deeply about life and death, about Jesus and our need for him to rescue us. And if that's you, then can I encourage you to investigate it a bit more, to find out a bit more about Jesus. So in the handouts that you got when you came in, there are some comment cards. Might be helpful if we all pull them out now and have a look at them. So if you're the kind of person who's heard this talk and you thought, that's interesting, I'd like to find out a bit more about Jesus, then why don't you tick the box there that says, I'd like to find out more about him. That seems like a sensible thing to do. And someone from the Christian Union will get in touch with you and find out how we can help you to explore more about Jesus. There won't be any pressure about that. We'll just ask you how we can help you. But it may be that actually you're past that point. You know that sin and death are lurking. You know that you need Jesus as your shepherd. And if that's you, then why put it off any longer? Why not commit yourself to the Good Shepherd right now? You could do that by saying something like this. Dear God, I'm sorry for the way I've rejected you and others. I know I deserve your punishment. Thank you for your gift of Jesus to rescue me from sin and death. Please forgive me and help me to live with him as my shepherd. Nothing magic about the words, but it is saying, I need to be rescued by Jesus. I want him as my shepherd. That's what you need to say to God to do that. So if that's something that you'd like to do, why don't you do it with me now? You can just echo it in your head as I pray it out loud. Let's pray. Dear God, I'm sorry for the way I've rejected you and others. I know I deserve your punishment. Thank you for your gift of Jesus to rescue me from sin and death.
please forgive me and help me to live with Jesus as my shepherd. Amen. Now, if you've just genuinely prayed that, then you need to know that God has forgiven you. Jesus died for you. He died to rescue you from sin and death. And if you've put your trust in him, it's done. God has begun his work in you to enable you to follow his Son. And that is great news. So if you've done that, if you've gone from not following Jesus to following Jesus, then we would love to hear about that because it's fantastic news. So if you've done that, why don't you tick that on your form, the bottom box there, and you can hand it in. And we'll get in touch with you. Make sure you put your name and contact details there so that we can ask you how we can help you to keep growing in your relationship with Jesus as your shepherd. Thanks so much for listening. I hope it's been really helpful. And I'm going to hand back to Hannah and she'll wrap it up for us.